love you.
Hello, my name's Tom Walker. Welcome to That'll Be The Day. In this podcast, I'm going to be talking to a man from Liverpool who lost his sight as a result of a stroke. But before we hear from Alan McComb, if you like the music at the start of this podcast, it's a track called That'll Be The Day by the Liverpool band The Vow. And as always, I'll be featuring a track by The Vow at the end of this podcast. To find out which one it is, stay tuned. Now, when he was fully sighted, Alan McComb was a roofer and enjoyed playing cricket. But in 2002, at the age of 34, Alan had a stroke, actually at a cricket match, which left him blind and caused significant cognitive deficit. I've recorded this podcast on my smartphone, but hopefully it hasn't adversely affected the audio too much. In any event, what Alan has to say, at least, is well worth listening to. And with me now is Alan McComb. I'm actually sitting in the cafe area of a gym in Liverpool. And Al, normally when I bump into you, it's in a pub on a Saturday night and you've got a belly full of ale.
Absolutely. And Tom, it's about time you went to the bar and got me a pint.
You're on a fitness kick now, though, aren't you?
I am.
Tell me about that.
I've been off the beer for nearly four months now, 3.5 months, I would say. And I just wanted to lose a lot of weight because I've been in a competition in Eindhoven, which is blind baseball, and we got to the final and we ended up with a silver medal. And my aim now is to change that silver medal into a gold one for next year. So I'm somewhat of a alchemist at the minute.
Isn't it fair to say that you probably realised your shortcomings in Eindhoven?
Yes, I realised that I was certain areas of the game that I needed to improve, especially sprinting. I've never been able to sprint. I've always been like more of a medium long distance runner, but I had real difficulty sprinting around the bases with a blindfold. Obviously it's a blind game, so I had difficulties there. I was falling over, and I realized I needed to improve that area of my game to progress in my sport.
And you've also been playing cricket for Wavertree Bryan Cricket Club as well.
Yeah, since about 2016-15 I've been playing there, and enjoyed regular annual competition during the summer. Yeah.
And we ought to point out there are a lot of people around, so if you can hear little noises in the background, it's young people, old people all running around the place getting ready for their session in the gym, and I'm detaining Alan as well. I want to go back, Al, to when you were fully sighted, because you lost your sight in 2002.
I do.
So that would have been, what, the age of
34.
So before then, you know, you were a keen sportsman. Tell me about your sporting prowess when you were fully sighted.
Prowess, maybe stretching it a bit, but I used to play a decent level of cricket, amateur level in Liverpool. My club was Prescott and Odyssey, and I played there for about 10 years there. And we reached some decent levels in that league, and also we went on to playing other competitions where I was always regularly chatted up by bigger clubs who wanted me to come and play at their club. But I always felt at home at Prescott Odyssey, and I always wanted to play with my friends and enjoy the game.
What was your specialism? Were you a batter, bowler, wicketkeeper?
I could bat, but I was a leg spinner with a bit of a googly and stuff like that.
So a bit of an all-rounder.
A bit of an all-rounder, yes.
And you were considered to be a good player because, as you say, you were chatted up by some clubs. Was there ever any temptation to go and join those slightly bigger clubs?
Not really, because at the time I was more about socialising and enjoying the whole cricket experience. I think once you get onto a club as a special player or a hired gun even, there's more pressure on you. I just didn't fancy that. I just didn't think it was part of my character, really.
Did you ever have a game where you took really great figures, or did you do that all the time?
I regularly got 5 wickets in a game, quite often. I get 50 wickets a year at least. So, that's the standards that you set, and the standards you measure yourself by.
Were there any other sports that you played?
Not really. Cricket was my first love. I, as a kid, I played a lot of sports, but I just fell by the wayside with as you get older, as you begin interested in women and beer.
Beer seems to feature quite prominently, probably in both of our lives, really.
Absolutely.
We both like a little drink every now and again. What work did you do when you were fully sighted?
I was a roofer in Slater Tyler, and my dad was a roofer, and he got me an apprenticeship in 85, I think, 84, yeah. And I had an apprenticeship, one of the last apprenticeship of the 80s, of Britain at the time, in the 80s, at a local company in Kirby called Highcrest.
I imagine that that's the kind of work that keeps you fit.
Oh yeah, it's very labour intensive, yes. And yeah, just with the general sport that I used to play, I was reasonably fit then, yeah.
So you were working full time, playing cricket, and socialising, or should we say going out for a few drinks?
Yes, and that's why I don't look as good as I did then, because
And then in 2002, what happened? Because you lost your sight. What caused that to happen?
Well, I actually lost my sight in a Lancashire Cup game in Kendal, even though that's outside Lancashire. It was a Lancashire Cup tie. When we went to the game in 2002, the day was really bad, and it was a lot of rain about. We started the game, but then we had a rain intervention, so we had to set the covers. So setting the covers, the first set, we had to push the covers onto the field and we had to go up a steep bank to get onto the field, and I felt a bit dizzy, and we set the covers, and we came back for the next set, and we went up the steep bank again, and that's when I collapsed and fell unconscious and ultimately had a stroke during the game.
And presumably they took you to hospital straight away, did they?
Yes, absolutely. I was there, it was about half an hour or something like that, where they were making me comfortable, my teammates, I could hear my teammates, but I wasn't aware, I was incoherent, and I wasn't aware of things. I just collapsed on the floor, and I only know of it now by what people have told me. Since.
Presumably you thought this is it, did you? Or were you sort of confident that you'd probably pull
through? A very, very strange thing happened. Like, I can't remember seeing, but apparently I could see, but I can't remember seeing. Well, the main thing that I witnessed was a very loud, strange noise in my ears, and I don't know if my brain exploding or semi-exploding or what, but it was a very strange noise in my head, and that's the only strong recollection I have of the incident.
So how long were you in hospital for?
I was in hospital for about 6 weeks, and then for 6 months afterwards. Wow. A very serious stroke. Doctors used to come around my bed and scratch the head, and my family said that they amazed that I was still alive, and you know.
Was it your fitness that maybe saved you, possibly?
I think it possibly helped, yes. It possibly helped. I think it probably did help.
So when you came out of hospital, you came out basically as a totally blind person?
I did, yes. I mean, but the bigger disability that I had is my memory loss, like coupled with blindness, because I had severe short-term memory. For example, if you would have come in to see me and spoken to me, about 5 minutes later you go to the toilet and come back and I forget that I'd spoken to you.
So that was worse than being visually impaired, losing
absolutely
sight.
Yeah, I think you know, both together is a nightmare, but I think more frustratingly, as time went by, and you become more aware of thoughts, and you're thinking about the things that you're saying on reflection, you feel embarrassed, because like it's not me, you know. I didn't feel it was me that was speaking these things, and I was very aware of what I was saying, and it just was not me.
And what about the rehab when you came out of hospital? And while you were in hospital, what was that like? What did they do to you and with you?
All right. It was brilliant, actually. They had physical rehab with at Broad Green. And like at the time, I could just about walk. And so they had to spend time on wobble boards and to get me balance back and stuff like that, walking around the hospital to able to get me mobility back. After that, a guy called Frank Ainsbury, as you probably know.
I don't know him, no. Where was he?
He was at LVSB at the time.
Oh, yeah, that's Bradbury Fields now, the local charity for visually impaired people, yeah.
And he had the interest in sight loss and brain injury. And he put a program together to help me regain my memory a lot quicker than that was going to happen. And Frank stayed with me for about 3 or 4 years. And he was a great example of rehabilitation. And he actually helped me develop a bit more to use my sight, with the little sight that I've got. He helped me to use what I've got in a better way.
Just going back to the stroke, do they know what caused it?
Yes, I had an irregular heart rate from the age of 19, and I had my stroke at 34. So they reckon all the results indicated that I had scar tissue on the heart, indicating a previous heart attack.
For people like me who've been visually impaired all our lives, it's really difficult to understand what it must be like for somebody like you who's gone from being fully sighted to being pretty much, you know, totally blind. How devastating was that for you? I can only imagine it's almost like a bereavement.
Actually, Tom, it was quite easy in a way, because I was so grateful for being alive, and you know, people didn't think I'd come through. And you know, being alive, I just saw it as a second chance to, okay, I've got my vision, but you know, a second chance to live it and you know, put my stamp on my life, basically.
How long did it take you, do you think, to come to terms with being a blind person? I mean, or have you never come to terms with it, in fact?
Very easy with this second chance that I thought I had. I always had the attitude that I have got this second chance, and I realised, being a sociable person, I realised that people don't speak to a blind, miserable bugger.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah. So you've thought, well, you know, you've got to show a happy face.
Absolutely.
A cheerful face,
yeah.
And people will...
Yeah, you know, you've got to... It's a sight of the world we live in, and, you know, you've got to be... you're dependent on sight of people, it helps you in many ways, and, you know, you get more help if you're reasonably... sociable.
I mean, we've got a couple of mutual friends, actually, Anne and Roy, and they knew you before you lost your sight. How did your friends react to you when you reappeared, if you like, on the social circuit, in the pubs, as a blind person?
Yeah, I think they were quite amazed, to be honest, because, you know, I haven't changed. I'm probably more gregarious, maybe. Gregarious, even. Yeah, I've always been... you know, an outward person, and you know, always enjoyed a good chat.
So you just reappeared. Presumably, mobility was a bit of an issue for you. How did you cope with that? Did you get a lot of training and things?
I had a lot of training at LVSB, as was Christopher
Grange. Yeah.
Yeah, Christopher Grange as well, and that took a long time, because, again, with the brain injury and. Cognition, poor cognition, it takes twice as long, maybe three times as long, for me to train and for the information to go into my medium term memory.
I get that. And what about things like Braille? Did you ever bother with that, or did you just use speech and voiceover?
When I went to university, I inquired about Braille, and I asked the people what's the difference doing a course in Braille and a course with digital, you know, audio technology.
Voice over and speech,
And they said about 4 years. It'd take 4 years longer, so that's why I just went to screen readers, etc.
Because you didn't bother with Braille at all?
I learned the alphabet, that was it.
Yeah, no, I was pretty hopeless at Braille, but I had a small amount of sight, so I could use magnification at the time. But like you, I use voiceover as well now, because it's just so much easier than Braille.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So while you were at university, I mean, you studied history, which does require a lot of memory. How did you cope with that? How did you make sure that you could memorise all the facts and the arguments?
Very, very tedious. The only thing that works is repetition. So I go over and over the same thing over and over till, you know, I get bored of it, and it somehow would lodge in my brain.
Did they make any special arrangements for you at Hope, Liverpool Hope University, which is where you attended?
They had speech software in there, and I had a great assistant called Chris High, who was essential for me as a academic support worker and a mentor almost, even though that wasn't his role.
And exams, presumably, you got a bit of
extra time. I got extra time. Also, in the end, it was mainly coursework that I did because the exams were deemed a bit unfair with the memory issues and stuff like that.
And then you did an MA as well.
Yeah, I did an MA, yeah. Enjoyed my MA studies. It's a bit more in depth, really, and it was difficult. But again, without Chris Hyer, I could never have achieved any of this.
So one thing you've done since you lost your sight is you started to play blind cricket, and I think you started to do that in 2016. Why did you get into that?
I only got into that after around 12, 13, 14 years of being blind, when someone told me that they actually play blind cricket. I'd seen the international game, which is awful. And someone said, no, there's this other game called the English play, and you play with the inflated ball, and you play shots which imitate the sighted game, which is more like cricket than the international one.
And briefly summarise the rules for me.
Same rules as in cricket. The only difference is slightly bigger stumps, and in the game I play a bigger ball. Other than that, it's more or less the same.
And you play for Wavertree Blind Cricket Club. What's that been like for you as a social and a sporting sort of exercise?
Well, it's a blind section of the cricket club. It's not blind cricket club, it's the blind section. Yeah, it's great. I very sociable. We're all about inclusion. It's not the highest level of competition, but it is... there's a place there for everybody, and we have different levels. So I would play for another team if I wanted to go into the higher competition. I would play for a different team, but it's a great starting point for anyone who likes cricket who's got a visual impairment.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, from a sporting point of view and from a satisfaction point of view, do you get the same level of satisfaction from playing for Wavertree as you would have done when you were playing sighted cricket?
No, it's not quite the same. Cricket, the sighted game of cricket, is a very visual game, and even people who play it in the blind game have different levels of sight. I am at the very low end of the sight levels, and I know it's dominated by people who have more sight than others, unfortunately.
When you say that sighted cricket is a very visual game, what does that mean?
Whereas blind people would track the ball by sound and would move to the sound, obviously seeing the ball is a quicker communication to the brain, so it's a lot quicker, a lot less messy, because they pick the ball up cleanly, for example. They throw down the wickets, and that replicated in the blind game takes longer.
Is that frustrating from your point of view?
Not really. You accept, what the difficulties are and your disability, and just get on with it. You know, it's still enjoyable. Just that it is a lot cleaner and a better visual aspect, I suppose, for people who are watching the game.
Have you been able to replicate your achievements in the blind game from those that you had in the sighted game?
No. No, just my because we're playing with a bigger ball, I can't do my leg spin, which I used to do as a sighted cricketer. It's like a size 4 football, so it's difficult to get your arm around the ball and spin it. You can achieve it, but not to the same level of success, really.
I've seen you play, and there's no doubt that compared with the other visually impaired cricketers, you play what I would recognise as proper cricket shots. Does that work in the blind game?
Yes, it does. It does. I think it's an advantage, really, having played sighted cricket and playing orthodox cricket shots, whereas like a lot of blind people, it's difficult to teach them those shots because it's very alien and at first attempt, uncomfortable, really.
Do blind people just try and hit the ball out the ground too much, do you think?
Different levels. Like someone like Roy Turner, who's a great sportsman anyway, you know, he's got great hand-ear coordination, would play unorthodox shots, but he just hit the ball so consistently. It's just amazing to experience, really.
Because a lot of cricket is about timing, certainly in the sighted game, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
You know, is that something you're able to achieve?
Yes, yeah. On my day, I am, yes, yeah. I think, in the blind game, I've got more success as a bowler. I am chiefly a bowler in the blind game. I don't bat much because the lack of vision, really.
And where do you field?
Well, most people with less sight feel close to the bat because it's just on instant reaction, really, and open to stop the ball, closer to the batsman.
And you've mentioned the social side. We have to point out that a few drinks are often taken after a game.
Always.
And
always.
From your point of view as a visually impaired person, has that helped you with the isolation?
Yes, sociability, having a good social circle, making friends. You know, I've always played my best cricket in the bar.
When you think about your fully sighted life and now you've been totally blind more or less for 20 years, and it's hard to ask which you prefer, but which has been the most satisfying?
It's difficult to say. I think probably I spoke to you earlier about our local venture that we've just started, some blind baseball, which we play the competition, international competition, in Eindhoven in August 19th in 2022, and we got a silver medal there, and that was probably one of the most satisfying things I've done, because it was a high level of competition that I'd never experienced in blind sport with either gold ball or cricket. And I just fully enjoyed that. I enjoyed the competition, really.
Are you going to try to get into baseball?
Yes. I think at the moment, as I explained earlier, I'm trying to turn a silver medal into gold for next year. So I've got a training program in the gym and stuff like that. So I'm on the road to helping turn silver into gold.
What are the challenges of playing baseball in relation to those of playing cricket for a blind person?
Well, blind baseball, unlike cricket, all people wear blindfolds, and we all have to run around the bases, whereas in cricket you would have a runner. The game in baseball is great, but my weakness in this area is running, because I've not run for over 20 years, and even when I was sighted, I was a poor runner. I was more of a medium long distance runner than a sprinter, and now I have to change my technique and become a sprinter, which is what I'm working on at the moment.
Alan, it's young girl.
Good to see you, young girl.
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
I'm young girl.
Can you just give us a lift to the cross trainer?
Yes,
certainly. Thank you.
Yeah, ready. Straight ahead.
Well, Alan, we've had our bacon butty, cups of coffee, and it's time for you to get down to do some work.
Absolutely.
You're on the cross trainer, so I'll leave you with it. Thanks for your time.
Tom, thanks very much.
Lovely to see you.
And you.
All the best. Enjoy. Okay. Hopefully see you in the pub soon.
Yeah, I will be. Yeah.
All right. Cheers, mate. All the best. Have a good session.
Right.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Okay, so which track by The Vow have I chosen? Well, it's their brand new single, Dude for David.
Gentlemen, live!